What do you think of Levantine cuisine?
Syrian and Lebanese food.
The Ottoman Empire didn't invent anything.
We don't want to get hate mail.
What I discovered in Egypt is that they do not have hummus.
Why is Trablus famous for food in Lebanon?
Trablus is one of the oldest cities in the world.
Tripoli in English, right?
Tripoli in English. So we can talk about baklava. And baklava, welcome to a new episode of Food Unscripted. It's unscripted. No notes, no preparation. And it's the way it is. 38 minutes in which we're going to discuss one subject every time, the whole season. After visiting the Dubai, why Dubai, food destination, and lots of interesting things, welcome my friend, my dear friend, Hani.
Good morning.
Good morning. It's so unscripted that I'm not sure how to start and where to start. Yeah. Bedouin foodie in the Emirates for the last 14 years, and you've been places, you've discovered places. You've been kind of hidden in a way or another, and now is the big boom and
coming on the scene. Yeah.
Today we're going to discuss Levantine cuisine.
Okay.
Lebanese, Syrian, Jordanian, if it counts as Levantine, probably all the way up to Cyprus, which we forget. I can give you lots of things about Cyprus, which I visited several times, all the way up to Turkey, without forgetting definitely Palestine. What do you think of Levantine cuisine?
Well, it's definitely very close to my heart. At home, we eat Palestinian and Syrian food. So it's going to be, I don't know much about Lebanese food. Besides, you know, mazza and things like that. So it's what I grew up eating. So it's my favorite food, obviously. I think it's very rich, very healthy. I believe that we can say that it's the Mediterranean diet. Part of it is the Levantine cuisine. My personal favorite of all of them is the Syrian one. And we can discuss that and more.
So let's remind us, mom is Syrian Palestinian.
Mom is half and half.
She cooks at home.
And yes, she cooks at home. She cooks at home with the help of a chef.
So the discussion started when we had that discussion that says, okay, who created what? Who did hummus? Who created hummus?
Yeah.
Who made shawarma, etc.? And what is Levantine cuisine? We wanted to debate Syrian versus Lebanese, and then we said, okay, wait, no, let's call it Levantine.
Yes.
And go all across. What are the updates that happen? Who does meza? Who does meza differently than others? Different names, wara anab,
yabra,
dolma, and so on.
Yeah.
So where shall we start? So I will start by Levantine cuisine is a cuisine that is based on the Mediterranean diet, that it has an influence of the Mediterranean Sea and all the mountains that surround it.
Yes.
It is a cuisine that embraces the four seasons, lots of vegetables. I would always say it's close to 70% naturally vegetarian.
Yes.
It's balanced. It's based on sharing, lots of colors, lots of flavors, and balancedly or adequately spiced without having a certain intensity on something and the other. So in comparison to the Asian cuisine, there is spicy food in it. There are spices in it, but balanced. Yes. There is acidity, but balanced. There is lemon, but balanced. And that cuisine is comfort food. It's definitely comforting, and you can have it every single day, all year, without feeling that, okay, I've had enough of rice, I've had enough of eating raw fish, I've had enough of having burgers. But you can eat Levantine cuisine every single day. Do you think it's because we have been brought up eating it, or everybody feels the same?
I believe it's a combination of both. Once people try it, people who don't know it try it, they definitely will agree with you on what you just said. It's very healthy, it's very good for you, it's a lot of vegetables, very easy to be a vegetarian in our part of the world. Most of the food is actually vegetarian and vegan. So that's definitely a plus for the cuisine.
I've been to many Lebanese restaurants around the world, and Syrian restaurants and Palestinian restaurants, which have probably up to 60 to 70% of their clients that are not from the Mediterranean, that are not from our part of the region. And I always ask the question, why? It's because they feel it's healthy, they feel it's generous, they feel it's not fatty, it's not trans fat fried, it just feels good. And I've been to one, the last restaurant I've been to is called Fadi's in Houston. Fadi's has created that long Lebanese buffet of great offerings. I've been there for like 2 or 3 hours, and not one Arab entered the place for that period. And they all come in, have a tray in hand, the amazing, beautiful buffet of home food, lots of colors, super eye candy and appetizing, and everybody enjoys it.
Yes, it's definitely having its moment now, Levantine cuisine, especially in the United States. But it came to London and Paris many years ago, and the locals, the French and the British, have started to eat it, and it became like a regular meal once a week, twice a week. The popularity of hummus helps. It's literally in every shop, every corner shop in the world now. You can find hummus. So it's becoming mainstream. It's becoming more and more popular. I believe Instagram also helped. It's visually beautiful. A lot of green in it, a lot of red, a lot of tomatoes. It's a beautiful cuisine.
What do you think? Who created what? Who created hummus? Who created shawarma? Who do you think of the 4 or 5 countries we mentioned has created it?
Okay, so I personally will always go with the Syrian. It's going to be Syria against Lebanon, but I believe that, well, hummus, I did a research on hummus. The first written recipe of hummus is in an Egyptian cookbook from I don't know how many years ago. So Egyptian people tell you they invented hummus. But it's definitely an Arab dish because hummus is the Arabic word for chickpea. So anything that doesn't have chickpea in it can't be called hummus. So we have this avocado dip that they call hummus. It's not hummus. Chocolate dip that they call chocolate hummus. If it doesn't have chickpea in it, it's not hummus. So I can't tell you who created it, but I can tell you my personal preference. And this is one rare occasion where I'll prefer the Lebanese version over the Syrian version. And specifically, it's because I find the Lebanese one has less garlic, more smooth, and a more of a refined taste, as opposed to the Syrian one, which is thicker and a bit stronger on the garlic. Do you agree with me on that one?
I do agree on that.
Especially with the garlic.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Hummus in the Lebanese version does not have garlic, should not have garlic. Garlic in the hummus is
not
a big no.
Not even a little bit.
Zero is a
you
big
see,
no.
The Syrian one cannot be made without garlic.
Hummus in our culture, I won't say which one is better, even though the Lebanese is better. Anyway.
I agree with you on this.
4 ingredients.
Yeah.
And to be able to be a good chef, you need to balance the 4 ingredients. So you need to use the best tahini that shall not be bitter. You need to use the best hummus and know if you're going to peel it or not.
That's it. That's
this is very important. Yeah. So many do not peel it.
Lebanese peel it, right?
Yes, and you need to know how because it's very tricky.
Yeah.
Fresh lemon versus citric acid. Yes, no, why, what? And this is also very tricky. Fresh lemon or lemon in the fridge or citric acid and why sometimes in a restaurant you need to put a little bit of citric acid because it becomes too watery. Salt. Definitely salt. Olive oil, of course.
Yeah.
And the most important part or tricky part, which few know about, is ice. And ice makes it balanced. Ice makes it creamy. Ice makes it look like mayonnaise. Ice makes it white. So sometimes you see a yellow hummus versus a white hummus and say, okay, what did they do? So lots of small tricks. So a little bit of that lemon and citric acid or not. Olive oil and what is the color of olive oil so it doesn't go to green. And ice or no ice, and all of this play a big role in making the perfect hummus. So when you put garlic, and considering that garlic has an empowered flavor and an empowering taste, it will cover on all the other ingredients. So if you're not a very skilled professional chef, you would add that garlic, and what would you eat? Garlic. What would you feel? Garlic. It feels like thyme.
Definitely the Syrian one is more yellow. And you could definitely taste the garlic. So it all depends what you grew up eating and what you're used to, you know, at the end of the day. But I have a question. How do they peel each individual?
hummus has a very tricky part, which you need to put in boiling water and boil for around 1 hour.
Yeah.
And then you need to put in it... I always forget the name, how we put it between English and French. So bicarbonate.
Sodium bicarbonate.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Which will play a beautiful role in peeling it smoothly. Yeah. It has a trick of stirring it or not stirring it, letting it drain a lot or alone or not. boiling it first time, so the peel or the skin is going to float around. You need to remove it first, remove the water, and then boil it again for another time. Yeah. After just stirring it once, and then keep the hummus to rest alone, yeah. And the other part of the peel will float. There is another little tiny trick. I'm not sure if you noticed it. Sometimes when you go to a full and hummus place, the hummus would look purple, and that. And maintaining the color of hummus being yellow without turning into purple is also another trick. I can do an episode about hummus.
Yeah.
Hummus is something. I will jump to the next part of the question, building on that, is who created hummus? We probably won't know. But who perfected hummus?
Yeah.
Forget that I'm a Lebanese, definitely the Lebanese. So the Lebanese probably didn't invent anything, but perfected them all. And considering lots of civilization came our way, and because we are on the front line of the sea, and because more than 56 civilization passed through Lebanon, and because the Romans passed through Lebanon, and because French occupied us for 50 years, and Ottomans had a big role to play by occupying us, nothing else, for 400 years. So all of this played a role in the Lebanese learning, considering they are people who learn, they are businessmen, they are intelligent people, and they took a little bit of everything. French taught us how to perfect the presentation and turning it into fine dining. Probably if Egyptians invented hummus, we have perfected it with the ice and water and et cetera, sure, to turn it the way it is.
The Egyptian hummus is thicker also. You can.
Yes, I can tell you a story about Egypt. So in some part of my show for 5 years back or 4 years ago, I did Mission Fool. And that Mission Fool started in Egypt, continued to Jordan, went to the UAE, and finished in Lebanon. Mm. And during that period, I understood Fool and who invented Fool and why we eat Fool. We
can talk about the staple food of Egypt.
Exactly. But Egyptians do not plant Fool. So Fool or fava beans come from Australia and the Englishmen and Britain. But Britain and Australia do plant fava beans as animal feed. So what the Arabs did is perfected it to be able to be enjoyed for humans. Yeah. And it is the staple of Egypt to be able to feed 100 million people every morning.
Yes.
What I discovered in Egypt is that they do not have hummus and they do not eat hummus. Understanding that after 2 months of filming and going all the way up from Egypt to Jordan and back to Lebanon, hummus was always considered the food of the rich. So fava beans or Fool was considered the food of the poor, and hummus was considered the food of the rich. So this is why in our culture, we never said we have Fool. We took Fool from the Egyptians. Lebanese do not use Fool unless it's a street food that we do not perfect, or we never claim that we have it, but we do have hummus. And the Egyptians today do eat hummus, but it's not part of the culture. So accordingly, understanding hummus versus Fool and why, this took 2 months of work, of hard work, where I visited in Egypt more than 70 Fool stalls. And in hummus, I can tell you I've done close to every single hummus all across the region. And why? So it starts by who invented, we don't know. Who perfected, we definitely know and confirm. I had several discussions about, let's talk about manouche, with Palestinians, who always had za'atar, who always had bread. But the creation of za'atar on a dough to create a manouche just came lately. And when I say lately, probably...
Is a manouche a pizza?
I can tell you the story of...
yes or no?
it is.
It's a type of pizza.
It can be.
Yeah.
This is another episode
of
itself.
Episode.
Why? Because it's... 90 seconds versus 3 minutes and why and heat, etc. So, but just to finish that idea, so Palestinians started doing a manouche in the last 50 years or 40 years when they saw that za'atar and dough can be brought up together into something that is around. I'm not saying that we taught them how to do it, but it's part of the Levantine cuisine and how it evolved. So did we invent manouche? I don't know. There is no proof for that.
Yeah.
But we definitely perfected it.
I want to talk about two things before the end of this episode. One, falafel, obviously,
please,
which is a big one. And the subtle or sometimes not so subtle differences between Syrian and Lebanese food. But let's start with the falafel. Do you like your falafel green on the inside or yellowish on the inside?
All the way yellow. I'm
see,
against green.
Me, I'm against the yellow. I can only eat the green.
This is Palestinian versus Lebanese.
Yeah.
100%.
Yeah.
So the Palestinian would go more on the green. The Lebanese would go more on the yellow.
Yes.
Why? Lebanese put more hummus into it. So it's an 80-20 or 70-30. When I say 30, it's Fool.
Fool, okay.
On the Palestinian side, it's sometimes 100% Fool. And if hummus is used, it's used only in 20%.
And do they put coriander in it also sometimes?
Or many
not?
Don't.
So the green comes from food, from beans?
From coriander.
From coriander?
From the green mixes.
Okay.
The green. But the black color you have and that black envelope you see is full.
Yeah.
On the yellow side, hummus always has a golden look.
Yes.
On the outside and on the inside.
Yeah.
I also toured around falafel and I asked a million. I've done my best 10 in Lebanon. Full versus hummus. Nobody has an answer.
Yeah.
Beirutis like full more. Inspired by the Arabs.
Yeah.
North Lebanon like more hummus, inspired by the villages of Lebanon and the 400 years of occupation and plenty of hummus around the villages. So who does it right? I don't know, it's a preference. But in all, I always see it as a general idea. When it's green, I go on the Palestinian side. When it's more yellow, I go on the Lebanese.
Yeah.
We're forgetting to talk a little bit about the Syrians, which we respect a lot. We can open that parenthesis in a bit.
Yes, so I love falafel. And for me, it's all green all the way is my preference. But when I went to Beirut, I was taken to Falafel Sahyoun. And they're legendary brothers. And it's a great story. I think you should perhaps tell us the story. But they were written up in the New York Times. And I actually read that article in the New York Times. What's the truth, the real story with them? They're two brothers that are fighting. They don't talk to each other.
Unfortunately. It's the father who had two brothers are fighting and they do not talk with each other. One took a yellow color, the other took a blue color. Blue and yellow opened one next to the other. Both are great, close to the same flavor. Whenever you go try both, do not take a side. And they cooled down.
So, and they're right next door to each other?
Yeah.
That's incredible.
I filmed with them probably 6 or 7 years back. They were fighting hard.
Yeah.
They even said it on camera. Fast forward to a long episode, which I did with the yellow one, for 25.
When you say blue and yellow, you mean the...
Yeah, the signboard.
The sign?
This is how I call them.
Okay.
So I did it with the yellow one, and he was, no, I do not want to talk about my brother. He's still my brother. I do not want to talk about it. So they matured in that discussion.
Okay.
The son of the blue one
created
a franchise which grew fast all around the world called Karim Sahyoun. So probably sometimes during COVID, they opened a cloud kitchen in Dubai.
I did not know that.
So Karim Sahyoun is the son of the blue one using the same recipe with a modernized feel that doesn't taste the same.
So what's the secret to a good to having like this worldwide fame? Is it the mix, the technique?
It's lots of things. It's garlic or not, onions or not, lots of greens or not. I can tell you about the Iraqi falafel as well. Lots of green or not, or ta'miya they call it in Egypt.
In Egypt, ta'miya,
far it is from
big
ours.
And flat, no? Or is it different?
Yeah, super different than others.
Yeah.
Way different than others
than
ours. Garlic or not, lots of spices, herbs or not, and then the mix of hummus versus ful, 50-50, 70-20, etc., etc. The last secret is how can you turn it into a fluffy bowl, and that fluffy bowl is putting the bicarbonate in it, and that carbonate, and then here comes the trick. If you put it in the fridge, it would just blow up.
Okay.
So you need to put it minutes before using it. And that minutes before using it, is it by portioning it or just throwing it on and turning it around? So falafel is one of the things like shawarma where you need a turnover. And the success of Sahyoun is that turnover. So
yes.
You never see him putting that white powder.
Yeah.
I've seen it lots of places. Just white powder, people think it's salt, it's not.
Yeah.
They mix it and start. So Sahyoun doesn't do it because he has that turnover. So the batch finishes within the hour.
Yeah.
And this is what makes a falafel. So we're talking about the falafel.
Yeah.
And then the sandwich, double bread or not.
One thing that stuck with me when I went and had that sandwich was that he cuts the tomato on top of the sandwich. It's not pre-sliced. Like, you know, you go to the falafel shop, they just grab the sliced tomato. They actually cut the tomato and you can see the color of it.
Yeah.
So that's the advantage of being in Lebanon. You have that wonderful produce. The fresh green, the mint, or whatever he puts on it. It's fantastic.
I'm gonna just throw an idea here.
Yeah.
There's a new episode. We're not gonna talk about it today. The evolution of Lebanese or Levantine cuisine to the East and how a falafel turned to be in Canada or in America or wherever.
Falafel is everywhere.
but dramatic. Yeah. So now falafel has lettuce in, big no.
Yeah.
Falafel has pickles in, big no. Falafel has sriracha sauce in it, big no.
You don't like pickle?
We'll talk about the evolution later on.
No pickle in your falafel?
Turnip pickle, not turnip, not, yeah. not cucumber
lift,
pickle.
Lift, right?
Lift. Not cucumber pickles.
Yes.
So that evolution of turning it into a chipotle style loaded sandwich that is cheap food that fills up your body is a no-no. Yeah. And what Sahyoon did is a small little falafel, you need three to fill up, but you'll enjoy the three. Yeah. Exactly like a shawarma. A shawarma is never this size. So a shawarma is a simple shawarma. Meat, a little bit of tomatoes, a little bit of tahini, one tiny pickle if you like the crunch or not. It doesn't have lettuce in it. It doesn't have all the shebang. Yes.
It's that big, thick thing like that.
Definitely not. Yeah. And you can eat two or three or four shawarma to enjoy the flavor.
Yes.
And not, it's not a staple fill up my body cheap street food.
Yeah, yeah.
So going back to Levantine cuisine, which we're discussing today, let's talk about the Syrian food.
Yes, let's talk about Syrian. Let me tell you first. What I noticed the difference between Lebanese and Syrian cuisine. I find the Syrian one to be more hearty, like a hearty thing, family style meal, has a lot more garlic, more samn, it's a heavier food.
Ghee.
I find the Lebanese one to be more refined, more effort on presentation, maybe fewer ingredients, more fresh, more grilled fish, but it's more simple in a way. And that, for me, that's the biggest difference that I find between the two.
Spot on.
While we do share dishes sometimes it's the same dish, but you'll taste it, it'll taste a little bit different. They're very small subtleties that it's hard for someone who didn't grow up eating these dishes to tell.
The more you go up north, the more you have more influences or European influences, or I would say Turkish influences. So in the Alepian cuisine, which is one of the best in the world, yes. And definitely.
So this is something even Lebanese people will agree to say.
The one of Aleppo the best in the world.
Aleppo cuisine is,
Top.
Yeah.
The perfection
I would love to have an episode about Aleppo.
Definitely. The perfection of perfection is the Armenian cuisine of Armenians who have left Armenia down to Aleppo.
Yeah.
And after arriving to Aleppo, were pushed down to Lebanon. So if you enjoy, if you have the chance to taste Lebanese Armenian cuisine with an Aleppan touch, perfection of the perfection. Yeah. This is the upscale.
When I was in Beirut, one of my friends whose mom is Armenian took me to Burj Hamoud. I call it Little Armenia.
Yeah,
it's the American in me, you know, Little Armenia. And we went around and we had some Armenian food. It's delicious. And one thing I just want to mention is the Armenian sausage shawarma. At Mano, Bedo, or Mano?
Basterma.
It's like...
Ooh, sizzle.
Phenomenal. That's another.
So the Syrian have more Turkish influences and more Iraqi influences and more Iranian influences. Yes. So all the food culture is based on Iran on inspirations and influences.
Yes.
If you go here in the GCC, you will definitely feel the Indian inspiration.
Oh, definitely.
And influence.
No, I know for a fact that we have a lot of Turkish in Syria. In Syrian food.
So these are the main differences.
Yeah.
So that spiciness, that redness, that fattiness, that etc. comes from that inspiration.
Yeah.
Syrian cuisine is definitely the best. As you said, you're spot on. Lebanese have a lighter touch to it. You will eat a meza table and without feeling heavy.
Yes.
On the Syrian side, it would feel, whoa, yeah. Sunday lunch.
I hear them that sometimes discussing how to make mlouchiyya, things like that. They're like, hey, it's fried first and then it's cooked. And this makes some food very heavy.
So back to the origins of who created it. I'm one of the people who believe that the Ottoman Empire didn't invent anything. Some say probably the Ottomans have invented the shawarma, or Ottomans have invented our meat, or the Ottomans invented hummus. Let me say it as is, probably historically. There is no proof on it, but this is my way of saying it. 400 years of occupation. And during a 400 years occupation, always the strong wins. And that strong didn't invent it, but that strong took it. And during 400 years, that all the region didn't have time to write, couldn't write. We couldn't write and document our history. So during 400 years, who invented hummus? They can claim they did, but not sure
they... Well, like we said, hummus is an Arabic word.
Did they create shawarma? I'm not sure. Did they create baklava? Definitely not. If you look today, if you taste today, the differences between, I would say, the Turkish today flavors and the Lebanese flavors or Levantine flavors, the difference is huge in simplicity, in softness, in sweetness, in class, in finesse, and so on and so forth. So back to that, without creating political problems, did they invent it?
We don't want to get hate mail.
Not at all. Did they create it? There is no proof they did.
Yeah.
Did we create it? There is no proof we did. But we can definitely discuss who turned it around to be even better. I can go on a very subtle and sensitive subject. Sometimes when I eat a knefe and I say Lebanese knefe, I get messages, sometimes hatred messages or whatever, say, no, the knefe is Nablusi.
Yes.
Wait. Knefe Nablusiye has nothing to do with knefe Lebanese. Nothing to do.
Did is we the copy Na'me or Khashne?
Na'me.
Yeah.
Did we copy it? We perfected it our way. We're not saying ours is better than yours. The Palestinians like their knefe their way. We don't enjoy it this way. So it's hard on the teeth. It's too sweet. Sometimes it has an orange color. Cheese is more on the cheese side, so salty. Salt and sweet is too intense in the mouth. This is how
it's
they do it.
It's a personal preference.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So the comparison is wrong.
Yeah.
On the Lebanese side, sometimes it has semolina. On the Palestinian side, it's made of semolina. On our side, it's not made of semolina. Semolina is used in the cheese to harden the cheese. It's not used in the farik. And the farik is asmaliye khishne powdered into ni'me with ghee. Okay, wait. There is a huge difference. And the asmaliye on the khishne side yeah. is the asmaliye as is. We do not have it in our culture.
Let's just quickly explain what the difference between na'me and khishne is. The topping of the knafe sometimes is very smooth, which is the Lebanese version, and sometimes it's got like a small pieces of very thin pasta. It's like a little, like hair almost.
Like shayriye.
Like shayriye. Like vermicelli, like even thinner.
Like vermicelli, exactly.
And that's the filling of the new viral chocolate that's coming out of Dubai from Fix. It's that stuff.
That's it. So the comparison is wrong. Knefe Lebanese is a knefe Lebanese, changed, perfected, differentiated to be Lebanese, enjoyed. Yeah. And the knefe Nablusiye are definitely their invention and how knefe was created, but it the comparison is wrong.
Yeah. I want to add something. In Ramadan, in Saudi, we eat full beans every day. Mm-hmm. So that's probably came to us from Egypt. We have a big Egyptian influence, especially in the Hejaz region, where I'm from. And the second comment I wanted to make about knafe is my mom, we have once a week, we have a family, everybody comes, and she orders the knafe, but half of it is smooth and half of it is that, because half the family has this preference and half the family likes that.
Yeah.
So it's a personal preference.
So we can talk about baklava, and baklava, which started probably, or they said in the Ottoman Empire, proof or not, I say it started in Trablus. In the Ottoman Empire, it's sweet, based on honey, which is in today's world, fake honey, definitely. It's thicker, bigger, way too sweet, super sticky. Comes in big chunks. Down to Tripoli, it became smaller, softer, based on sugar syrup, flakier. Go up to Damascus, they're super famous in the small asabia.
Yes, I love those. They melt in your mouth.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
So every city developed it the way they want, the way their culture does it, the way women, ladies roll. Wara anab. You can go from a wara anab that takes 30 minutes to do, big chunks, pieces, mm-hmm. all the way to a 16-hour long cooking in Tripoli, Lebanese way. In Syria, it has more tomatoes in it. It has more acidity in it, turned into yabra or the names they use. Dolma is not only wara anab, but it has all the vegetables stuffed with rice. I've had it in Iraq, and I love it. I'm a big fan of dolma dish. Lots of garlic. It kills me, but super enjoyable. I can finish it.
We were talking about how the Turkish influence. A lot of Syrian dishes have Turkish names.
Yeah.
Like yabra and other things. I wanted to ask you also about the difference. Why is Trablus famous for food in Lebanon? They have kubenaye, I think, or I don't know. You always hear in Trablus, the Trablus is really good.
Trablus is one of the oldest cities in the world.
Tripoli in English, right?
Tripoli, yeah. In English. And it was the hub of business on the Silk Road. It was the hub of connection between the north. It's the highest city in Lebanon. It's a connection with all the Turkish and Syrian part. It's a connection due to the flat land and then the mountains up to Baalbek on the other side, and a connection down with Beirut first and then down to Sidon. So Tripoli was a hub, and to date it has beautiful old souks buildings and yeah, homes, etc. So that hub of creation, one of the most famous doing sweets, so the baklava, mm-hmm, halab, 1881, etc. And the development of slow cooking and enjoyable things. So the Tripolitans are known to take their time doing good food. Definitely known for the best ashta ever. So when someone asked, where do you get the best...
Ashta is cream.
Clotted cream.
Clotted cream.
When someone asked, where is the best food in Lebanon? I would say, wait. 1,200 villages. Every village has something. Kibbe, Ehden, Ashta, Trablus, Knefe, Saida. And every city has something.
Yeah.
So you need to focus. The Meza was created in Zahle, on the Berdawne. Ara, Zahle. So every city has something and developed it. And we all united definitely under one country. Yeah. So Lebanese food goes all around. Tripoli has lots of story to tell. And Tripoli has been built differently than Saida. So if you go to Saida, the buildings are different. The feel of an old city is different because different civilization built them. So Tripoli has nothing to do with Saida. And in one country, considering lots of civilization passed by, Romans had a touch. Mamalik had a touch. Phoenicians left a touch.
Let's talk a little bit Jordanian and Palestinian. So we don't forget them. I recently went to Amman for the first time. Imagine, just recently, I was invited to the Jordan International Food Festival, the inaugural food festival. It was fantastic, and I got to go around and see a lot of young chefs modernizing Levantine cuisine. And while I was there, I also had the famous mansaf, which is a Bedouin-style dish. So I found that the Jordanian cuisine has influences from on the Bedouin part, mm-hmm, spices, rice, dajamid, while it also shares some of the Syrian and Lebanese in the mazas and all of these things. But what they have that Lebanon doesn't have is that the influence of the Bedouin.
Yes, 100%. I love jamid.
Yeah,
I love jamid.
It's like a dry, dehydrated yogurt.
Yes.
That's liquefied.
Yes.
And used as a sauce on the
yellow rice,
yeah,
and chicken. Yeah. Oof, I love jamid. Yeah. Or
and,
meat
and
or lamb.
I was when we were having it, I was eating. I grabbed my knife and my fork and a spoon, and they said you have to eat mansaf with your hands.
Yeah.
So I didn't know that.
Yeah. Have you learned how to eat with your hand and then just throw it in?
Yeah, I know how to do it. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So this episode needs to be very politically correct.
Yeah.
And at the end, definitely we're going to have comments saying, we invented this, you forgot this.
Yeah.
You were biased for Lebanon, you were biased for Syria.
Talk a bit about Palestinian before we end.
I believe the Palestinian is one of the oldest countries, and it's not 50-year-old, and it's not 1948, and it's not what's happening today. Unfortunately, sadly, Google Maps removed the word Palestine and turned it into wrong Israel. So back to Palestine and the history of Palestine and what Palestinians were. And probably hundreds and or thousands of years back, Palestine and Lebanon and Syria were all one country with lots of influences.
Yeah.
Palestine and Lebanese are close to the same, facing the sea.
Yes,
and
they both have the Mediterranean.
Yes, and behind the mountains, there is all of Syria. And we're all living together in one country. So we learned from each other. As I said, Knefe on their side, Msakhan, which we never knew how to do.
Fantastic
and they do
dish.
Perfectly well, yeah, perfectly well. Msakhan is sage bread rolled into small cheese roll style fingers. Super, extremely
it's
delicious.
Chicken cooked with lots of olive oil, onions, and then it has some sumak, which is a tangy.
Yep. So respect to their cuisine, respect to the cuisine that is now turning around the world and probably getting more and more look at. Yeah. Syrians, and after all the wars that happened, and lately in the last 20 years, are opening restaurants all across. Montreal has
We're seeing here
amazing
in Dubai,
Syrian restaurants.
A lot of Syrian restaurants.
Dubai has amazing Syrian restaurants, and that cuisine is coming truly without adaptation. And what can I say? We will talk about it in the adaptation episode later on. Lebanese cuisine has adapted so much, considering Lebanese are more of businessmen and want to do more money, and sometimes have passed the line of stop. Wait, there is a line you cannot stop. And turning shawarma into a chipotle wrap and adding rice to it and et cetera, in my opinion, is way too wrong. So wait, adaptation is nice, but wait. So the Syrians coming out lately for the last 20 years are preserving their traditions, and Palestinians are doing the same, being proud of this is who we are, this is what we want to show to the world, and people are connecting to it. So beautifully all around, if you're not from this region and you want to enjoy our food, when you hear Levantine, sometimes it depends on the signboard. Back to politics. So should we write Lebanese cuisine? Should we write Syrian cuisine? Should we write Palestinian cuisine? Should we write Levantine cuisine? Should we write Mediterranean cuisine?
Absolutely.
And add Greek to it, etc., etc. So lots of things happen. Before we end, I just want to throw in Cyprus, which consider themselves European, have lots of influences from our cuisine. Their meza is way smaller, so probably 10 dishes, but they closely are who we are. So I've been to Cyprus and not to touristic places for a long episode with the Ministry of Tourism for 10 days, and I've been to all the villages. And if you look at the habits, they're close to the same to ours, but differently. So we do jibne baladiye, they do halloum.
That's what I was going to say. Halloumi, the most famous Cypriot export.
Mm-hmm. They have their meza, which comes free on all the tables, but way different than ours. Not developed the same way, small, just to eat a bite and okay, the plate goes on another table. They have their stuffed meat, they have their chicken, they have their rice, they have their drinks, they have their version of arak, and so on and so forth. So we always forget to talk about Cyprus, considering that it's not an Arab country and they're on the other side of our waters, of the horizon, but they're very close to us. They're very, very close without even them knowing it. We were all brought up in the same spirit. Definitely from the Roman days, yes, all the way to today.
Fantastic.
So this is in a nutshell our episode about Levantine cuisine. It's not enough. 38 minutes were not enough.
Not enough.
We're going to do part two.
I want to talk individual dishes. I want to talk about shishbarak, yogurt and cooking, so much more. So shishbarak is my favorite dish, just so you know.
Kibbe Lebaniye is my favorite.
Kibbe Lebaniye. Oh, that's strong second. But the use of yogurt in the cooking,
yes.
This is a whole episode.
The use of, and the creation of labneh, which is unique to the region.
Labneh, the ultimate breakfast food of Lebanon.
So let's keep it for episode two. In this episode, we discussed a little bit of Levantine cuisine. We definitely forgot lots of things. About lots of dishes. We forgot about lots of people. So excuse us and do not judge us for the little details. So accordingly, we're going to talk about it in another episode, and we're going to talk about the details of Mediterranean Levantine table, which has in Lebanon more than 200 plates of meza and another 200 plates of cooked dishes, meza, yachnet, or you called them something else last day. So I call them yachnet, you call them...
I don't remember.
Yeah. See you on our next episode.
And the breads, different breads also.
Oh, different breads.
Yeah,
who invented flatbread? Who invented flatbread? Harry and I will meet you in the next one.
Follow our socials.